And now, with no further ado, I welcome Frank Chapman to the mic.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So I brought out chapter 7 of the book. I'm not going to read it. It was just to scare you to get you ready for the smaller portion. Yeah, thank you, Aisnan. Thank everyone. Thank you, Sister Angelique. This is really an inspiring moment. Well, I want to talk about capitalism, slavery, and revolution, the unfinished business of 1776 revolution, the rise of U.S. imperialism, Jim Crow and the rise of monopoly capitalism, monopoly capitalist attempts to harness the black liberation movement, world war liberation and the Bolshevik Revolution, black liberation, the rise of fascism in World War II, overcoming Jim Crow, open struggle for the democratic for the new democratic revolution called the Civil Rights Movement, era of repression, incubating fascist movements, which we're seeing some maturity of right now in the White House, and developing and grasping a strategy for black liberation and socialism. I just read to you all of the chapters of the book. That's what we're going to be dealing with. And we can't do all that here. This is a strange meeting, you know. And the reason why we're having it is because I suppose we've been done with this book by now. And we prematurely announced it. And so people were saying, well, you got to do something. So we're going to come and talk about an unfinished book. But it's a very important subject. It's a very important subject. And I just have to develop it correctly, you know. And with your help, I'm sure I can do that. We can't rush to judgment here. A few misconceptions I want to address that I talk about in the book. People say that, I've read this in a number of different places, and I'm sure some of you have too, because I see a lot of well-read people in here. People say that the idea of a black nation in the United States was imported from Russia, that it came here as a result of the Bolshevik Revolution and the Comintern, and it was part of the international defense mechanism that the Soviets were setting up in order to defend the revolution. And so we had no aspirations in this country to be a black nation. We were just sitting there like bumps on the log, waiting for the Soviets to have a revolution and tell us that we were a black nation. That's a lie. That didn't happen. If you think I'm kidding, go back and read Martin R. Delaney. Go back and look at our history. You know, the colored convention movement, which started at Bethel AME Church in 1830. There was a national movement for liberation in this country even before slavery ended. It started in the African Methodist Episcopal churches. And then during the abolition period, there was an immigration movement. I'm not talking about the American Colonization Society, which was something that the slaveholders put together, but I'm talking about something that black folks put together. They even went so far as to purchase some land in Canada. Because as long as slavery existed, a black person in this country was either a second-class citizen or had no citizenship rights at all. They couldn't vote. They couldn't do nothing that ordinary citizens do. So this is a question that did not come from Russia. You know, it's indigenous to the black liberation movement in this country, which really began in the belly of slave ships. It just goes through different stages. So we talk about all the different stages of the black liberation movement in this book. We talk about the colored convention movement. You know, we talk about the immigration movement. We talk about Marcus Garvey movement. But we also talk about something else that's very important. We talk about the historic relationship between the struggle for socialism and the struggle for black liberation. And why is it that that relationship began as soon as socialism emerged? As soon as it emerged. You know, I'm talking about the same year that the Communist Manifesto was published, the same year that they had the uprising in Germany, and German immigrants was forced to come here as a result of being defeated in that revolution. A lot of those immigrants were Marxists, scientific socialists. And when they came here with that understanding. And they were the first ones in this country to fight for black and white unity. The first ones. They would not allow anyone to belong to their clubs if they were not an abolitionist. You could not be a part of a Marxist club at that time, which was founded by Joseph Wiedemeyer, and be a supporter of slavery. And then if you read Capital, which I had a long prison sentence one time, and so I spent about 14 years in prison. I had plenty of time to read Capital. So if you read Capital, in Capital I learned something that made me want to join the Communist Party time I read it. I learned that the foundations of capitalism, that the foundation of industrial capitalism was in African slavery. I learned that in Capital. I thought it was in Italy somewhere. I thought the merchants in Italy were the first capitalists with them warehouses and stuff and doing all that trading they were doing. But Marx said, no. They could have done that for another 1,000 years and not created no industrial capital. Industrial capital was created by the African slave trade. So I had to read further. And as I read further, I begin to see what he was talking about. Because the whole entire international market at that time was really based on the exportation of commodities from the New World back to the Old World, what they called the New World. Columbus was lost and founded this place and called it the New World. But in reality, the labor that was played a crucial role in that market was slave labor. And Marx, in an argument that he was having with Proudhon in the book he wrote, The Poverty of Philosophy, pointed that out. He clearly pointed that out and said, if you take away American slavery, that the whole entire world commercial system will collapse. That's what he said. So was he correct? I believe he was. So, but let's go to the politics. We also talk about the early bourgeois revolutions that came right at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, except for 1776. But if we talk about maybe 30 years later, right? We're right at the Industrial Revolution. And then we have the Great French Revolution, which is really the scary one, you know, even for them guys from 1776. But now, what happened there was this. What happened there was you had slavery also being challenged by part of that revolution. And guess what happened? The slaves in Haiti heard about it, and they had a revolution. So if you look at history, every revolution that they've had since slavery, we have been involved in it, demanding our freedom at the same time. You know, we've been involved in it as a people, and then later on as an oppressed nation. Moving right along. You talked about it, Asa, when you talked about Reconstruction and so on. When Reconstruction came, when slavery was abolished, then the Black Liberation Movement took on a different tone. For the first time since Haiti, blacks found themselves in political power where they could drive the nail to the wall. And it was during that time that we had the most democratic advances in the history of this country. Was it not? It was during that time. You used to couldn't vote in this country unless you had a certain amount of property. Black Reconstruction abolished that. You know, there was no public education in this country. Black Reconstruction created that, you see? So here was an example of former slaves getting in power and advancing this country democratically like it had never been advanced before. The capitalist bosses in the North and the planters in the South, and the planters just an agrarian capitalist, because they're all producing for the same market. They got together, killed Black Reconstruction, and the age of imperialism began to come about. So we give a detailed following of these events to show how that alliance was created. Now I could go on and on and on and on and on with the details and so forth and so on. But what I want to do is just kind of like sum things up and show you how we got to the point where we're talking about the Black Nation. And that's going to just take, I'm going to do that in a few paragraphs. So I had to write this down. I couldn't hold this in my head. Okay. So what we have attempted to demonstrate in this book and here, based strictly on the historical evidence we have presented, that the right and existence of self-determination is inherent in the historic struggle for Black liberation in the United States. The form the struggle for self-determination takes in any given moment of history is determined in the final analysis by the objective social relations, not by subjective evaluation. During the period of chattel slavery, the principal forms of struggle was the movement for the abolition of slavery and the colored convention movement. During Reconstruction, it was the franchise, full citizenship rights, and self-government in those geographical areas where Black people were a majority. The minimum requirement for self-government was the right to vote, that is universal, what they called it back in those days, manhood suffrage, and to hold public office. Reconstruction became a period of revolutionary struggle for democracy and bloody counter-revolution because Black-controlled governments in the South were making great democratic advances. It was during this revolutionary period that Black former slaves and poor white farmers united against the Southern planter to establish the only democratic regime the South has ever known. In areas like South Carolina, Mississippi, and Louisiana, there was self-government throughout the Black Belt counties and dominant Black representation in the state legislatures. We have already given a detailed narrative of how Black people led the way in making some of the greatest democratic advances of the 19th century, and how these advances were squashed in a murderous campaign of sheer terror by the deposed planter class and their capitalist allies in the North. We have shown how the rise of imperialism, World War and Revolution impacted the struggle for Black liberation and its growing national consciousness. We have looked at the emergence of a Black class-conscious working class rising up in the era of imperialism and linking up to the international struggle against imperialism. So now we must examine the exact nature of the relationship between Black liberation and international and the international socialist movement spearheaded by the Communist International. And there's no better way of doing that than to look at how the Communist International position on the Black Liberation Movement led to the complete reorganization of the Communist Party in the United States. First, let's look at the Communist International position and the line of march they proposed. The winter of 1928 was a decisive moment in the history of the struggle against imperialism. Preparations were being made for the 6th Congress of the Communist International. The Anglo-American Secretariat of the Communist International had established a special subcommittee to prepare a draft resolution for the official Negro Commission of the Congress. Harry Haywood was one of the 5 people on this subcommittee. According to Haywood, there were 4 blacks and 1 white. There was general agreement that the Communist Party in the United States had grossly underestimated the revolutionary potential of the black liberation movement. But there was a basic disagreement as to the source of the party's underestimation. Most of the members of the subcommittee, including Haywood, took the position that the source was white chauvinism. It was white chauvinist attitudes and prejudices that led to incorrect policies. The Bolsheviks, approaching it from a Marxist-Leninist perspective, took a different position. In fact, they maintained that the American comrades had stood the whole matter on its head because the denial of the revolutionary character of the black liberation movement came from a fundamentally incorrect social democratic line which rejected the national question altogether. Now, that's what the whole entire Second International did. The whole entire Second International rejected the national question altogether. In other words, it was the white workers of Europe and America, and the hell with the workers in the colonies, you know, the hell with the oppressed people in those places. So it was not peculiar to America. That was the position of the Second International. And the Third International, the Communist International, corrected this position. But the way that they put it was like this. They said that they were restoring the revolutionary essence of Marxism. Because they said Marx had already warned you that you could not free labor in a white skin if it was branded and sold in a black skin. So when you gave up that fight, you lost your revolutionary essence. When you start having Jim Crow unions and all of that, when you start having social democrats in Europe who fought for the fatherland and the hill with the colonies, you know. So that's the context in which we're placing it. Also, one has to be, well, let me just go on to say this here. This rejection of the revolutionary character of the black liberation movement actually leads you right back into the camp of the social democrats. That's on the right. But there was also the left, the ultra-left advanced the concept of pure proletarian revolution. In other words, they saw no national question. They didn't have time to fight Jim Crow. They didn't have time to speak out against the lynching that was going on because that only clouded the class question. That only clouded it up. The class question had to be crystal clear. Socialism first, and then we'll get around to black liberation later, you know. Pure proletarian revolution, right? Also, one has to be careful as to not get caught in the ideological snares of racism, which sees the struggle as simply a fight against racial prejudice of white people. This approach overlooks the economic and social roots of racism and denies the agrarian democratic revolution initiated during Reconstruction that is still pivotal in the struggle for black equality in the United States. We lost the right to vote in the 1890s. We fought to get it back in 1965, and the Supreme Court just took it away again, didn't it? You know, so we're still dealing with that fight. We're still dealing with that fight. In fact, Reconstruction demonstrated that in the South, self-determination for black people, that is political power, including using force of arms, was a guarantee of black equality. Once they took the troops out, you know, once they did away with the union leagues that the blacks had, the Klan rose back up. But these were not just theoretical discussions. Another black comrade, James Ford, in his presentation to the 6th Congress, was quick to point out that the 19 resolutions from the Comintern to the U.S. On party work regarding black liberation, of the 19, not a single one had been put into effect, and further pointed out that there were only 50 black people in the party out of a population of 12 million black Americans. So I want you to do a little experiment. Remember that we're 50, okay? And then go back and look at how the black membership of the party increased after they implemented this resolution, after they dealt with black people as an oppressed nation within this nation. It's a phenomenal increase. Look at what happened after the party got involved in the Scottsboro case, after they got involved in organizing workers in the textile mills in North Carolina. In North Carolina, if they call a union organizer in North Carolina, they tied his legs to a log and took him out in the country and busted his kneecaps with a crowbar and left him there. So, you know, they went through all of this here. And as they were going through it, they built a mighty movement. We haven't seen nothing like it since. In fact, in terms of the South, you can go so far as to say that had there not been the role of the communists, there wouldn't have been no civil rights movement. Because a lot of the groundwork was laid there in the South. Read Hosea Hudson's Black Work in the Deep South. It's over there on the tape, you know. I'm not making this stuff up, you know. So that was the tone that was set for the 6th Congress to carry out with unprecedented determination, a radical reevaluation and criticism of the work and policies of the U.S. Communist Party, okay? When those policies were put into place, we grew. I'm a communist. I joined the Communist Party, I joined it in spirit in 1963. I tried to join it, in fact, in 1976 when I came home from prison, but they wouldn't let me come in for security reasons, you know. So I finally got in before the 70s were out. We increased in great numbers once we started doing the work in the black community and once we started fighting for black and white unity of the working class. Now, I'm going to just give a little personal experience, and then I'm going to put it to rest. Anybody in here know Ann Braden? Okay. Ann Braden introduced me to some mine workers in Stearns, Kentucky. And the party was supporting those workers. Now, this was not back in the 30s. This was in the 70s, okay. Ann suggested that I go down there and, talk to the miners. And there was a brother, a mine worker down there named Darrell, who we wanted to bring to our national convention in New York in 1979. So, okay, I went down to talk to him. She didn't tell me that it was an all-white town. And I was real leery, you know. Because they were shooting down there. This was a serious strike. You know, they were shooting. And those miners can shoot real good because they do a lot of squirrel hunting, you know. So now I'm thinking that my life is in jeopardy. Actually, I'm looking for the quickest way to get out. How can I get out of here, you know? And so they told me, you're going to be all right. I was sheltered and protected by white miners who talked with a deep Southern accent, and it was just really hard for me to get used to that. It was very, very difficult, you know. But when I got back to the safe zone, I thought about it. And it taught me that if you fight for unity, if you engage in the struggle for unity, you can get it. You can get it. Because, see, those miners recognized that they needed our help, and they recognized that they were being exploited and oppressed, and they wanted our help. And he came to our convention and spoke, and we took up a big collection for him, And we took him around to labor councils throughout the country, trying to get some support for those miners down there. Some labor councils gave support, some didn't. The ones that are really dominated by craft unions, you know what they did, you know. So that's just an example that I happen to live through. And we believe that we can make that happen again. Now, I don't believe in history repeating itself. You know, I don't believe in that. I believe in mistakes repeating themselves. You know, history doesn't come back and repeat itself. But we can make the same mistakes today that we made yesterday. You know that, because we've done it. We have a chance to build on what was a successful, organized struggle during the 20s, the 30s, the 40s. The 50s, they almost knocked us out of the box. But we came back in Montgomery, Alabama, didn't we? And in the 60s, with the Angela Davis case, actually late 60s, and that was the largest defense movement in the history of this country. But we had over 67 countries involved, and we built a mass movement here like nobody's ever seen. So we know we can do this, okay? It's time to do it again. It's time to do it again. The time is now. And I'm glad you gave the introduction that you gave, because you talked about the heat of the moment, you know, the things that are going on right now, you know. But we can fight back and we can win, and that's what we need to do. So we want to encourage you to read the literature of Freedom Road Socialist Organization. I'm not making a recruitment speech here, but those of you who want to join, we welcome you to join. Those of you who want to carry on further discussion, we'll be glad to discuss it with you, all right? That's all I got.